crossing the same river twice, always crossing the river inside her. How many trips to emotion did it take Mrs. P to reach the baby who missed her? She asked the nurse if she ever happened to see a baby in the hallway, would she please let her, Mrs. P, room A104, hold its bare skin against hers so the mother feeling could drink in from its warm skin. Across the country of time, the hunger sharpened, so when, that night at dinner, they served bread pudding, she held it against her chest for the warmth of it. Cats were outside, meowing. Today she'd introduce herself to Mr. P, remind him that once they both saw a yellow church on the left side of Vermont. He lowered his eyes because there were cats somewhere he couldn't touch and wanted to. Mrs. P said she'd make a list of all the things he couldn't have, and if it matched her list, they could sit at the same table together at lunch. Mr. P was concerned because the cat sounded like music giving out his address. She tried to be helpful, as her mother had taught her to be. Bad air made good was what her mother said. Cats don't know what's what, she explained to Mr. P. Even if they're the only things we love, doesn't mean we want them. Mr. P said cat sounds outside were dots connected to spell out his name. She hoped there'd be stewed tomatoes today. She knew how to make them. She made them once with her mother on a yellow tablecloth. She liked Mr. P, freckles on his hand, resting so close to hers. She hoped he didn't think she was just a maroon napkin stuffed in a glass. Mrs. P wanted to travel with him to every Shoney's in the USA. Someday, after he raised his head from his doze, she'd tell him so. Even if he kept moving to chairs across the room, well, so would she. There was nowhere he could go. Her desires getting smaller. Not to have diarrhea was enough to ask. Anything else, a gift. She knew from the farm, you can't stalk a crow. But she couldn't quite remember what crows looked like or where they used to live. She guessed, well, if you didn't know what a sparrow looked like, you wouldn't see too many of them either. In the commissary of the counter, Mrs. P. wanted something in the worst way. Wanted something free. Bad thoughts like corks bobbing up one by one. Just when you didn't want a thought, up pops a memory. If the girl behind the counter would only forget to charge her change for bacon on top of her egg sandwich, maybe all the cork could stay under at one time. Mrs. P. could pretend she'd said rye when they gave her white, and in that way the girl would say, oh, my mistake, and it'd only be $1.67 instead of $2. But the girl in the apron remembered everything. Mrs. P. could tell she was cold as a shark and liked to ring money up. If Mrs. P. minded, she didn't show it, thanking Shark sweetly, and then, oh dear, noticing a fly on the sandwich, and there it went. She must have swallowed it by accident. Then Apron frowned, but didn't take anything off, not a cent, never even offered. Coughing, Mrs. P. left, like there was a cork stuck in her throat. Keeping it under, she'd pretend she was somebody else, somebody who hadn't eaten a fly. Like the robin on top leaf of a tree, balanced carefully, Muriel thought Mr. P. loved her. It was that delicate. He was like a warm, wet tea bag. She put on her best pink silk slip, had her hair done up in large curlers, walked up to his bedroom to tell him. She felt power in the little shell of words, I want you. Hair grew out each her pores all over her arms. She'd never noticed that before. The power of love. He'd clearly said, the less he sees of her, the better he likes it. Said that yesterday. Hear that? the better he likes her. He likes her. Muriel knew she would be a special moment belonging only to him every day before he went down to dinner. Years later, he'd remember her voice, her body, where it all began, room 204. Knowing people can't be trusted for right emotions, she knocked softly at first. She wasn't fooled by Mr. P asking every woman on the floor to sleep with him and giving them a stick of Wrigley's instead. Who says you can't put new shoelaces in old shoes? Hope, love, remembrance. If I died, who else would think of him before dinner? Muriel knocked louder. Through the sliver of door light, Muriel could see Mr. P had a Santa Claus hat laid out for the party. Yesterday he asked if she'd give him one of each of her earrings to give his new girlfriend for Christmas, arguing she'd still have one of each left. Peeking through, Muriel saw his shiny gray hair. She didn't want a baby with gray hair, but now was no time to think of love's consequences. Setting her heart like a clock, she knocked louder. Knock, knock. No safe place from rejection. Knock as if your life depends on it, Muriel thought. Some peculiarity visited him, making him look up to see her, but then look down again. Non-intervention? Never. She burst in, yelling, "Smile, you fool!" He looked up as if in agony. A toilet flushed in the back room, and out came Mrs. P., her heroic proportions blocking the view. Muriel felt an anger she knew would never let her sleep. "When I own this store, I'll fire all of you," Muriel hissed. Mrs. P. asked if the mister had a comb. Pretending she didn't see Muriel, she let it stay that way, his arm outstretched, offering the comb until Muriel turned away. Mrs. P. thought, was the search over for a waistline, a feeling behind the face, being inside the TV set, going home, standing on one foot without falling, music with old melodies, boats filled with snow, a Christmas tree they wouldn't take down, excitement about all she could feel, a satin gown, a red roadster, someone who would play a trick on her or tell her a joke. A late flower, games you didn't have to win, closeness which didn't ruin being close, a plate not taken away too soon, singing and dancing, a plant on the sink in the window, a perfect sunny day without smells. Was the search finally over for someone who could hear the ringing in her ears before she was someone her neighbors used to know? Mr. P. used to be important, had as many as 20 phone calls a day, a secretary with a dictating machine and a foot treadle, girls who were young and one didn't wear pants, but she was from Nebraska. He'd find out what they needed and give it to them. A nickel for the jukebox, a ride to the movies. They needed to be told something nice. He'd tell them. A king is what he was. He sent a picture nominating himself for the most valuable community member to the Chamber of Commerce. He didn't get it, but at least he was nominated. That's the memorable part. So then what did he have? He was a contender, that's what. Even if no one else appreciated that. He suddenly was awake with memory, went inside the men's room to brush his head with a washcloth, carrying it for just such an occasion. It's not how many days go by, it's how you make the days. That was the slogan used to be on his desk in bronze. You have to know when to hold and know when to fold, played the loudspeakers. Bingo tonight! Spin till you win! Always another chance. There was no way Mrs. P. could have known it was Muriel in the next bathroom stall when she helpfully shouted to remember to wipe from front to back and not the other way around. Of course, the door crashed open, Muriel storming out, half arrayed, to report the intrusion to the janitor. baffling, isn't it? One offers knowledge and wisdom about personal hygiene, and it falls deftly to the tiles, sad. On her way out, the maintenance man appeared with Muriel, asking about the problem. No problem, but the people love the wrong things in life. They don't love cleanliness. Muriel was still sputtering when she called Mrs. P. a dirty Jew. Mrs. P. had studied world religions and spat back that Muriel was a dirty Mennonite. The poor cleanup crew had to come in and sweep up the paper. Later at quiet time, Mrs. P. learned that every single person had a soul, and love could not live in the same body with impatience. Then the soul doctor left her to herself to think on that. What a terrible thought. People went on forever? Muriel for eternity? In the next stall in the hereafter? Well, Mrs. P. would just have to find another bathroom. She didn't tell the chaplain that, as she smiled so sweet, a face as innocent as a wide, wide door. Coco refused the biggest piece of cake to keep people from knowing how bad she wanted it. So what if Muriel's husband once owned the Barbizon Plaza and she once lived on the east side of New York City? There was only one place she could go now, down the hall, as time escorted her to Section AA, and Muriel, with all her loud bracelets, could still only eat one egg in the morning like everyone else. And then there was that awful Mrs. P. Since Coco knew Mrs. P. stole her idea of sticking dry macaroni on a paper plate, she didn't go to the craft show anymore. The world of crafts cleaned her out like a wound. I'll never go back to that room again, she vowed. Even if she missed something of beauty, say a picture of a red or yellow tree done with spaghetti sauce. Mrs. P. had the nerve to turn Coco into the front desk, saying she plagiarized everything she said, calling her pocketbook a purse, for example. Mrs. P. did not own that word, Coco thought hotly. Anger made her free of caring, and that vile Mr. P. had a cop a feel every time he saw her with his talk, his dirty talk. He said tit one day. When she reported him, he claimed he said pit. He was referring to an inside of a prune, he explained. That even made her madder. Mrs. P. told Betty that Mr. P. had put his pink sores inside her body so they could heal there, but now Mrs. P. wanted them out of there. Did she have to give up everything she loved to be happy, even her inside body space? She was crying so bad now they had to give her a toy monkey to sleep with. Look here, she told the doctor of the soul. He puts his wounds inside here to heal. The doctor dropped her feet in Epsom salts and dried them off. He actually touched her. She thought he'd believe her when she said she was pregnant, and he did. He agreed. Maybe all black people were good like him. She dreamed the baby was perfect and sweet and not crying, not rolling over, although laid in a thin crib of dirty sheets where it lay contented. Turn the sadness over on a plate, the helper said. Release the jelly sandwich. Spill it on the sheets. Forgive Coco for calling her pocketbook a purse. Forgive? No. They were Mrs. P.'s exact words, pocketbook, purse. And there were robbers everywhere, robbers of words, of husbands, of thoughts, of babies. She dreamed she had a husband again and woke up cold. She accused Mr. P. of buying sandals for 21-year-old girls, or else she thought so. Louis would give you the shirt off his back and did just that for Muriel. He was like walking in soft earth so gently. She mewed. He may look like a chihuahua, but he had the heart of a pussy. The day he took off his shirt, Muriel went running down to the dining hall. This was proof she'd become his nightly hors d'oeuvre. They'd watch the pigeons on his sill before the bell each night at 5. He would tell her that her life was good enough for her. She liked philosophy. Louis always said words one could take and ponder. The horizon is never far away. Muriel liked that one. When the pompous grass blossoms, it's time to move inland. This said when she pressed her side against his. Little love codes, she thought. So when she ran to show the white silk shirt she'd taken from his chair, He was probably going to give it to her anyway. Well, he certainly would if he had been home, she thought. She never suspected Coco would betray her. Nobody, even Mrs. P., would have imagined Coco running upstairs to demand a shirt, too. Pushing past his gone fishing sign, looking and calling for an article of clothing. Nothing but pigeons to be seen outside his room. Banging open all the doors, Coco took his absence personally, shoved a picture of the Sixth Fleet crooked on his wall. When things start mattering, everything hurts. Coco, without a crust of regret, tucked his hairbrush inside her purse. In the storm of passion unleashed by rejection, she flew downstairs to place the prize center table, the hairbrush right next to the bread. She remarked that the weather looked better for sailing, to no one in particular. Circular thought shifted the ground at Pinecrest now that Louis was nowhere to be seen. The only safety was in the unknown, it was said he once said. But symptoms flared. Coco said there was nothing wrong with her arm, except she couldn't move it. Muriel said you have to hold your heart in your hands like a precious egg. Mr. P. started talking in a deep voice. Mrs. said everything was lovely, but she felt miserable. Who will save us, Betty thought, but had the grace to keep it to herself. Of grief there was no sign, but where, one worried, would love now find a target? With the natural obstinacy of the lost, a pinochle game was started in the lobby. Skills in short supply in the known world made bridges between players crumble, waters of confusion rising, covering roads to one another, until the language of Louis was as forgotten as yesterday's coffee. But Mr. P. felt he'd never have his old voice back again. When they introduced Chuck to floor two, Coco ran upstairs to tell everyone that a famous man was coming to live, to occupy poor dead Louis's room. Chuck, she said, they've named a roast after him. I saw it once at Foodland. Coco now was all out of breath with the burden of known secrets. She went from room to room, knocking, announcing the new arrival. At tea time, everyone assembled to see the man Coco said looked like a roast. Even the back wing, which usually was kept locked, except for punching numbers 373, filed in like Yingling ducklings off a Hong Kong dock. The clatter of canes, the clutch of walkers, the multitudes assembled staring at the new patient, circling and pointing. Tall, hardly bent Chuck nodded, slowly backing away toward the stairwell where he scrambled away holding onto the walls. A similar spectacle once, when a distant cousin of Kate Smith's lead guitarist was said to visit Pinecrest, causing such a ruckus he never came back. Chuck, 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 chanted the residents. Did the grocery store give you all the money? Chuck did not come down for dinner that night, or any other, and for all we know, he never left his room again without wearing sunglasses and a wide-brim hat as disguise. Mr. P. was sent to the opportunity room because he wouldn't keep his clothes on. When he entered room 15, he was yelling that he didn't like things named 15, and he preferred a little ginger in the situation. Mrs. P. was already there waiting. She'd been asked to come because she wouldn't take her clothes off. It was hard to give her a shower. The doctor said, now is the only time which exists. She asked if he'd let her talk about the now that used to be. He said no. She grew more frightened and held on to her clothes. She begged, can we talk about the now that's going to exist? He said no. She trembled with the thought that there was nothing but now. She didn't want it to damage the past, the future. Music was put on, and a helper, would come in soon to hold her hands. This meant pill time. Slowly she came to like the way the light came off the palm, how Mr. P. nodded in his chair, soft, pink, and naked, how he looked up and winked his drooping eye. No, it was definitely a call to her, as if he knew who she was. Sometimes she'd see an angel outside the pane of glass looking in. Oh, she was scared it came to get her new friend, Mr. P. She looked again, and now there was nothing outside but the present. If Mr. P. didn't need her to hold the flashcards, he might move to another room. Oh, this would be terrible. Mrs. P. decided to rip up the card which said Tuesday so he'd never learn it. And Nurse, exasperated with his jumping from Monday to Wednesday, would send him back in. He still couldn't remember Mrs. P. That was the trouble, even after all the time she taught him cards. He got bored and tried to rush her, complaining then that she went too fast. Yes, Mrs. P. would get rid of Tuesday. The lessons would go smoother, and no matter how much you hurried, you still couldn't catch up with someone's memory. On Friday afternoon, Mr. P. is walking down Corridor 3, giving everyone he sees a $1 bill so they won't forget him when he dies. Different people achieve immortality in different ways, and Mr. P., a businessman, always thinks ahead. Coco is downstairs doing what the yoga teacher said, rest like a bow, walk like the wind, stand like a pine. But to be honest, it hurts her hernia when she goes from the wind to the pine. Muriel was certain this time she was pregnant, and there she is in the dispensary again, complaining that they don't understand. Dizziness? Nausea? What else could it be? And where is Mrs. P.? There she is, far down the hall in her green chenille bathrobes with slippers that match. She waits at the beginning of the end of the floor, watching the old man come unsteadily toward her. She'll slip her hand in his, lead him to the bench. Hello, how are you? They'll sit in the slender sun under the moon-shaped window in the bright white alcove. Unless it's already tomorrow, they might go down for tea. Fridays are peaceful at Pinecrest. When he says he misses Bing Crosby, she'll say, I know, I know. That's how new memories begin.
Pinecrest Rest Haven was written, read, and produced by Grace Cavalieri for Forest Woods Media Productions. For more information, phone or fax 304-754-8847. To order a cassette, send $10 plus $1.50 shipping and handling to Pinecrest, In Support Distribution, 12308 Granada Way, Woodbridge, Virginia, 22192, or contact the Writers' Center in Bethesda, Maryland. Pinecrest Rest Haven was copyrighted by Grace Cavalieri in 1997. No part can be reproduced without written permission from the author.